Welcome to Day Zero Update for May 21st, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Greg Perkin.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
Yeah, we've got a big week this week of announcements. We got a number of games that were announced for this week. One big one. We got some delay. We got a game being delisted that nobody's talked about since it launched. And we got some other news here. And maybe a certain actor who's getting their first appearance in a video game in whatever the 30-plus years they've been doing things. That is a bit of a surprise. And we got the latest news on Overwatch 2, the bad news.
One that potential players are not were not happy about. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. And then we'll end it with talking about what the Summer Game Fest schedule is looking like right now. We still only have 5 events on here, one of which is taking place about 2 weeks earlier than everything else. But we'll get to that stuff. But before we do, we'll talk about what we've been playing. I have been playing more Tears of the Kingdom, kind of putting a bunch of time into getting more of the towers. I think I have 2 left to get, and I think they are in the northwest and southwest corners of the map. One is in the very snowy part, which you were talking about last week, and you needed clothing for those areas. And I'll say there is another way to do it without needing any expensive clothing.
Too late.
It's cooking. You get a bunch of chili peppers if you find those. Put 5 of them together, you get 12 and a half minutes of cold resistance. That'll help you out in those areas. Make it much easier in those ways. That's how I did it. One of the areas I landed in the snow area, I was like, all right, going to eat this thing. And I still had time spared over, even though it needed me to like rebuild a bridge and do some other weird shit. But those are great for that kind of stuff. All I have are pants that help out with that. I don't have a top. But I've done that. Done some cool exploration of the sky islands and such. Had one that, like, there's a couple of them that are like, hey, we don't have the crystal we need for this. We'll shine a light to where it's at, but you got to bring it back. And one of these had at a considerable distance away that was attached to a boss-like figure that basically as soon as like they popped it off or I popped it off, I took it and ran over to these platforms and used these rockets to blast me out of there and managed to get it to there just in time as I was about to mess some things up with that. But that worked out pretty well. And usually those kind of shrines, challenges, they just pop you into a little area. It's like, here's a chest and here's your little bonus thing, your little orb. So you don't really have to do anything extra. Though I did have one that I had to do a little bit of extra work to get to. And it's like, all right, we're going to teach you how to shoot a bow in the air. I was like, what? Usually these don't, you know, ask you to do too much if you have to do a bunch of work to get to them. That kind of stuff, but that wasn't too big of an issue there. But let's see what else. I explored the chasm, one of the chasms, not a ton of it, but enough to get like 2 spawn points down there. They have their own equivalent of the shrine spawn points down there. But that's what you use your whatever bright bloom seeds, whatever those are called. That's what you use those for mostly. Outside of the few dark caves that are in the game, but that whole area is in pitch black. And I eventually figured out how you can actually throw stuff around. It's kind of dumb because you have to like hold down the R button like you're going to throw your weapon and then hit up to be like, no, I want to throw an item. And then you throw that sort of in a weird way. You don't even get like a cursor or anything. So if you're trying to space it out, you know, well enough, that can be tough with that. But yeah, that has their own enemies down there that are all like gloom versions of the enemies you'll find up top. Even the flying like Aracuda has a version down there, that kind of stuff. They have their own like little outposts and all that kind of stuff. And then ran into one of the big dudes that are the gloom version of the Hinox, the Frox, I think they're called. They're like frog versions of the Hinox. And that thing fucked me up pretty good. I had a quarter of a heart and I was like, all right, we're teleporting out of here. So I'm glad that they're not using the JRPG version of teleporting, where if you are in a cave or something like that, you can't do it.
Nope, you can do it literally everywhere.
Yeah, you can do it in the air, you can do it underground.
You can do it by falling off of a cliff to your death.
As far as I know, there's no way to escape the depths aside from teleporting or using Ascend, right?
Yep.
Probably. I don't think you can use Ascend because I think it's... There's a limit to how high the ceiling is that it can use it for.
That's right. So it's just teleporting then, because I haven't seen like an exit.
Yeah. You could probably build like a hot air balloon, something like that, to get out. Mm. But I don't think that's a great use of that. But yeah, that's been something fun. I finally found Hestu. He was just hanging out in this random area. Afraid of some... So there's trees that can attack you now. That's really fucked up.
Oh, yeah. yes.
He was, like, cowering. He was like, those trees are scaring the shit out of me. I'm like, what? Okay. Yeah.
And then the worst thing is the loot you get from those trees doesn't really...
That was more wood.
It's wood. You get acorns. You get fronds that you can attach to a stick to turn it into, you know, something to produce wind if you need that. Which... Now that I have more inventory space, I can do that. Luckily, after that, he does two upgrades for you, and then he's like, I'm going east. And I found him in the landing area. So I went there and spent the rest of my seeds on him. And his new music is really well done. A good change up of what the song they played in the original was, so that's cool. But yeah, that's what else I've been doing. I did some quests in the Zora domain, as they're still trying to figure out how to deal with the sludge problem. Which I got my Zora armor back, which I had forgot that was even a thing, because that gives you the ability to kind of swim up waterfalls.
Yeah.
Though, as they say, not the ones with sludge in them.
Yeah.
So I was like, because immediately when Lady Yona gives that to you, you're like, they point right at the sludges that go up into the sky. And I was like, oh, yeah, now we can go up there. And she's like, but not for the sludge. And I'm like, all right, fuck.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a whole fun thing. I found the king over there, making some good progress there on the various bits of storyline there. But I still have to figure out, like, what some cryptic stuff they've told me really means for that. What else I've been doing? That's probably about it. I've been just going around doing some shrines and all that kind of stuff, dealing with some of the stuff in the sky. There's some cool stuff up there, but there's not as much as you might expect. Most of what you see are just like random bits of rock that are up there that serve no real purpose other than just maybe saving you if you're falling out of the sky. It's like a place to land if you need to refill your stamina, that kind of stuff. But I've done pretty well getting through the desert with no heat equipment, mostly by staying in the shadows as much as I could, though I had a dumb moment with some of the towers basically aren't working, so you have to help a guy outside of them. And this one had like these elevators that were kind of not working. And I was trying to figure out what to do. I eventually figured it out, but I was trying to use this big, heavy box to attach it to it, and it broke off and flew off into the distance. And I was like, well, fuck, this is screwed. But eventually respawned. And yeah, like seeing how quickly things respawn or, you know, despawn as well is kind of annoying. It makes sense why, but I had like one of the big Zonai fans. I was using to get some air in this area because there was a treasure chest that was surrounded by a bunch of spikes. So I was like, well, I don't have any easy way to get lift here, so I used one of those to out of my capsules to get myself in the air, and I was carrying that around, and a tree fought me, and I ran to gather its droppings as it fell down the hill, and when I got back up to the top, it already desynced the fan. I was like, well, that's really aggressive. But yeah, that's the game's good. I think there's still plenty of weird control things that I'm not a huge fan of, and you know, not being able to remap much of anything. They just by default change the buttons for jump and sprint in a way that I wasn't a huge fan of, so I swapped it back to what it was in Breath of the Wild, but I would have liked to move the sprint down to like the left stick button instead, and like make it easier to have like a running jump, that kind of stuff. But yeah, also doing some of the story stuff, there are some means for like the flashback memories that were in the Breath of the Wild. They have a new means for doing that stuff here, and I've been doing some of that stuff, and that's been fun to do as well. Especially because I've found one just not even through the story start of that introduction, where you meet Impa and she tells you about this stuff. So yeah, that's been largely what I've been doing in that game. The other game I've been playing a good bit here this week is Humanity, which is the new release from Enhanced Games. They're publishing this, made by The Limited, THA Limited. That is it's the studio of a well-known Japanese art director. I think a lot of his work that I saw cited on his Wikipedia page was down to like web design type of stuff. But he's had a lot of books on art design and all that kind of stuff. So this is sort of coming out of them in conjunction with Enhanced Games. And it is a puzzle game that I would say is a mix of games like Choo Choo Rocket, Echo Chrome, some of the style of that, and a little bit of Lemmings to it, as you are this weird spiritual Shiba Inu that is given the controls to essentially guide these humans to some sort of goal on these stages. They imply that, like, I assume these are humans that have passed on and are trying to get to the afterlife kind of thing. And so the story beats you get surrounding all the stages kind of hints to that kind of stuff. So you're kind of running around in these maps, initially holding, hitting square and a direction to put a directional marker for the humans to follow. And going around, you eventually get jump abilities to lay down that gets them to jump across gaps or up in the air. You get like long jumps, high jumps, and I think regular jumps. There are also, what else are there? I think there are some other abilities I am blanking on right now, but I played through the first world's worth of stages and gotten almost all of the collectibles, which they call Goldies. They are just essentially large humans that are gold-skinned that as you don't have to collect them all, but you need to collect at least some because they are gating progress through the worlds to the final stage in each world based on how many of those you have. So there's at least a bare amount to do, but you also want to get them because they add gameplay elements to the game as you get reach upgrade points in the... They show you like a little timeline of how many you need to get certain upgrades. And some of them are cosmetics, like, oh, they have hats now, or here's outfits they can have. And you don't really set specific ones. It's just they have a bunch of random stuff on them. But the good gameplay stuff is the ability to restart a stage with your markers laid down. Because despite the Lemmings comparison, the humans, if they fall off the side of a stage, they don't die. They just respawn back in the door that they come into the stage on. But the Goldies can die. They do not respawn, so you may have to restart a stage if you're trying to get all of them. But that's not been too troubling. They do have options in the menus. They're like, do you want to see the solution for the stage kind of thing? And I think the PS5 and PS4 versions have PS Plus hints tied to them, so hint videos that you can use. But I think on Steam, there's nothing like that. So they just have solutions in the game. So if you're stumped on anything, you can look at that. And I haven't looked to see how comprehensive it is, if it's just got different videos for different levels of solutions, that kind of stuff. But that seems like it's in there.
Yeah, I'm playing the game too, and I actually never noticed the hint section. But then again, I'm only still in the tutorial.
Yeah, the tutorials do a good job of getting you into the groove of things. But yeah, the upgrades do some cool stuff like that. They do add some ability to pause the stage, so you can like move around and look around, sort of get a better scope of what's going on in the stage. So in the first world, you get some different wrinkles, like there's a stage with a bunch of fan floors, so your humans sort of bounce over them to the other platforms, that kind of stuff, and there'll be triggers that turn on other sections of the map or turn on equipment or whatever that's going on. That kind of stuff that is helpful. And they do have an ability to upgrade that can let you see like what each trigger turns on. So if you can, make sure you're turning on stuff in the right order to do that kind of stuff. So this is a very clever puzzle game in that kind of vein that works out really well. And if you like your trophies, it throws them out constantly. That I've seen, and especially has some for getting all the Goldies in each of the like 7 or 8 worlds I think there are. I think they say 90 plus stages, so definitely worth playing if you're into puzzle games. It seems like a really good one of those. I'm looking forward to put some more time into it and see how deviant it can get. I think there's only one stage where I had to move on because I wasn't figuring out the solution to get the last Goldie there, but I can probably just look at the solution video if I have to, because I'm not sure if they add abilities when you come back to stages. I thought it might have happened for one stage where I was unable to figure out what was going on, but it might have just been an element to that stage I didn't really realize was there. But
the Goldies aren't actually required, right? You can just like beat them without it. They just like add other
thing. There is a gate at the end of each world that's like, oh, you need 10 of these, but it's pretty low for what you can get up to that point. And there are stages you can avoid if you want to just mainline, but I was playing everything and trying to get all the Goldies, so I was pretty well over whatever limit was on that first world. The first world might have been like 10 or 15, I forget. There's Humanity. I think it's $30 to pay for it, but it's on PlayStation Plus Extra, and definitely worth checking out if you need something that's a very chill puzzle game. It's not really all that stressful or anything, because you're not losing anything by letting the humans run off the edges. You have the ability to restart with keeping your all your markers down, so you can sort of get into spots where it's like, oh, there's so much going on, I don't know what to change to see where it's messing up. I had one stage that was particularly like that, where it was launching humans all around the place, and I had to fix that up, because you kind of get it into a point where it's kind of a perpetual machine of making sure certain elements are working in that stage, and I can just stop doing that and move to having my other humans do the stuff I needed. That game's really cool. Definitely another game that fits the style that Enhanced Games has had, with Tetsuya Mizuguchi is the head of that studio doing Res Infinite and Tetris Effect. This game fits right in with the styling and the chill vibes, despite some of the elements of it being maybe a little bit stressful. But and that game also supports PSVR and PSVR 2. I've not played in that mode just yet, but that seems like it would be pretty a pretty good version of that game, because you're just able to walk around the stage, I believe, and that would, you know, just replace the need to turn the camera around constantly. Though you do have to control the dog and jump around. I kind of wish you could just fly, but that might be an upgrade at some point, because there have been a number of jumps where I've had to really time it well, because you don't suffer anything from losing, and you just have to respawn right back where you were before. So, but when you're trying to, you know, finish the game or finish the stage, you know, without having to restart, that can be a little bit of annoyance, but nothing really that stressful. So there's Humanity. Definitely recommend checking that one out if you got PS Plus Extra. And with the other PS Plus stuff, they put up 3 PSP games on premium, and I checked them out. Did a stream on Friday for that. Pursuit Force is one of the classic kind of early PSP games, coming from Big Studios, that would go on to make the MotorStorm PSP game and then Little Deviants for the Vita. But this is a game that is basically, you know, a video game version of like vehicle action movies. People jump, you know, jumping from cars to car to take out the bad guys, that kind of stuff. But it's a very arcadey kind of game. As you're a cop, part of the new Pursuit Force, because 5 gangs have taken over the city, and you're part of the new, you know, cop force that, you know, tries to take out these gangs. I saw 3 of them so far. One is the traditional, you know, Italian mob family called the Capelli family. There's the PMC group. There's a convict group that, you know, does not give a shit and will attack the civilians on the roads. So you kind of have to worry about that in those stages. But you're kind of playing each of the stages, trying to get a high ranking out of it. You know, they grade you at the end. I got A's in almost every single stage I was playing, so it wasn't too tough. But also you can rewind if you need to for any of that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's ways to cheese it. That wasn't too bad of a game. Still holds up pretty well. But yeah, there's not a ton there. It's like 5 or 6 stages for each of the gangs. And as you play, you level up, to the next like level, and that unlocks more stages to do, for each. And you do some road stages, you do some water stages where you're on a boat, and there may be another type of stage, but they also have like racing, like time trial racing in the main menu, that kind of stuff. But that's nothing I would want to do, but I think there's some trophies tied to that stuff. The other game, Siphon Filter Logan Shadow, is the last of the Siphon Filter games they can put on this service, unless they're going to put the PS2 game, which I don't believe was well received. I think it was called like the Omega Strain or something like that. But Logan Shadow is, you know, taking what the Dark Mirror was doing pretty well and made it even better. The stages are a little bit shorter. They break up each of the missions into a few chapters. So that kind of makes it a bit more suitable for portable play, or, you know, playing in chunks for that. They do support the right stick on this one. They've been going back to some of these games and adding right stick support, so that it remaps for like this game, remaps the face buttons to the right stick, which can be annoying in the menus if you're just used to fiddling around, because you'll hit buttons when you're doing that stuff. But in the game, it works pretty well for that stuff. But a lot of it just works the same as Dark Mirror. It's just another one of those. But this time you're taking on a Middle East terrorist that's working with Syrians. It's some stuff that definitely comes about of the Afghanistan and Iraq wars of that era. So there you go for that. That one has pretty simple trophies to it, where it's like it's a trophy for completing each of the missions. So you just do that. You get it pretty easily. I think the Dark Mirror has the same thing, but I think that one has an easy mode, so you can even just make it even easier. Here I didn't see any sort of difficulty toggle when I started. So there you go for that. And the last one is Blade Dancer, Lineage of Light. This is a JRPG that is, I would say, in the maybe the ease framework for story stuff. Is your character that's going to this land on a boat. It doesn't crash, but you just you're on a boat and found out the voice actor for the main character, Lance, ends up voicing Adol Christian in the recent games. So there's some lineage there, but this was a game made by Sony that they didn't bring over. So NIS America ended up publishing it and localizing it for them. So the action itself, it's a fairly standard JRPG. It has an active time battle system to it, which is a little bit tough at first, but you know, you can rewind out of battles if you run into tough enemies, that kind of stuff. So you can pretty easily just kind of get out of tough areas. But the weirdest thing is it has a targeting system for everything. So if you want to talk to an NPC, you have to target them first before you can talk, which maybe saves you some time of accidentally like repeating dialogue with them. But it gets a bit annoying when you have to do that for doors to go into, you know, different shops, that kind of stuff. But it does help with the battles, because you just see enemies running around. You can highlight them to see like what enemies are in the battle you're going to take on if you want to. So you can see if like, oh, these are tough enemies, I want to go grind out some fights on the earlier, easier enemies and then level up and make the other tougher enemies more challenging or more easy to complete, that kind of stuff. So grinding is probably the best way to take on that game, especially because the enemies respawn really fast as they are on the field. So they kind of keep that stuff flowing. But yeah, the other weird thing is the weapons have a durability to them that is a little bit aggressive. I haven't figured out necessarily how to deal with it. It seems like you could take a weapon that loses durability and take it to a dude that can give you a crafting recipe out of that weapon so you can make it yourself. And you may have to go buy or find the materials to make it again, but then you can just keep making it since you have the crafting recipe. So there's some weird stuff to it, but it's mostly straightforward from what I've seen. So, but that's a game that I think the Metacritic for was at like 60, and that seems about right, where it's like above average, but not like an amazing game or anything. So pretty solid offering there for PSP stuff, but hopefully they get to some of the cooler stuff, like the there's the other Pursuit Force game. There's the MotorStorm PSP game that's pretty cool. There's a lot of cool PSP stuff that hopefully makes it to the PS Plus Premium. But that's been pretty much it for me for this week. So, Brandon, how have you been enjoying Zelda?
I have been enjoying it immensely.
yeah.
I finally got my copy in the mail Monday, so I was able to, you know, finally play through and enjoy it. And yeah, it's so good, man. It really is so good. It did take me a little bit to remember how the controls work, because it had been a while since I played Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, and it's not a standard to the way you play a lot of like action RPGs.
Yeah. So one of the first things about it that I liked is they actually give you a reason to why Link is suddenly like depowered after, you know, getting so much in Breath of the Wild. You know, there's this whole like prologue sequence where, you know, it's anybody who watched like all the teasers and stuff up to this point know what it is. It's when him and Zelda are going down underneath the castle to the catacombs underneath, and, you know, they find like all these murals and stuff, and then suddenly the Demon King, who is obviously supposed to be Ganondorf, his like dried out husk remains are like imprisoned underneath the arm of, you find out who that guy, that arm belongs to, but that's a little later. Who comes back to life because he's got, you know, he's still Ganon, and he basically wrecks the Master Sword. He literally manages to break it, which is supposed to be impossible. Like, not even in Breath of the Wild, where literally everything is breakable. It just sort of loses power for a little while before you can use it again. In this case, he just straight up breaks it, shatters it into a bunch of pieces, leaving only the half behind. And not only that, he basically takes one of your arms. Well, I mean, he doesn't literally take it, but he wounds it to such a degree that when you wake up, it's replaced with another arm. And then the game actually does one of the things I think that made it somewhat, in some ways, better than Breath of the Wild, but also not as much, is it then gives you a really well-done tutorial sequence where it sort of gives you sort of the basics of what you can do. Gradually, it gives you all these new powers and things you can work with. And of course, you're introduced to Raru, the guy who was the... it's heavily implied that he was the first king of Hyrule. And you end up sort of finding an idea of like where the people of Hyrule originally come from. Because it appears that he's apparently one of the group of people called the Zonai. And this is the first game in like the whole series where we're finally able to see who the Zonai are. And we find out they're basically very tall goat people, basically. And he basically gives you one of his arms, because the arm that you had, that you originally had, you know, Ganon had basically destroyed it, so he replaces it with his arm. And because you have that arm now, it means that you can now do things that he himself was able to. Things like the Ultra Hand ability, which is the one that lets you, you know, pick things up and stick them together and, you know, things like that. And you end up and you're literally like in these sky ruins, like floating above the clouds to start off before you can even think of going back down to the surface. And, you know, I will give this game credit in that it gives you a bunch of these various powers like right off the bat, like in a very short amount of time. Though I will say that because they give you so many so quickly, it can be kind of hard to forget how many of these abilities you actually have. Like, I kept wanting to climb up places when I remembered, oh, right, I can just do the thing where I can, like, jump up through the bottom and climb through the ether out on top of it.
Yeah, that's the easiest one to forget about, because you're just...
Yeah, you just want to climb. Yeah. Like, you spent so much of Breath of the Wild climbing that it's just instinct, basically.
And that's still, like, 80% of what you're going to do here, because you have anything you can fly into, and you also have a height limit.
Yeah, you have to be... The ceiling of what you're wanting to jump through has to be at a certain height for you to actually use it.
Yeah.
Very quickly, one of the things about this game that I loved is they show you just how expansive the Ultra Hand system actually is, and just the amount of things that you can do with. They really did go all in with the whole idea of, we're going to give you all these tools that you can play with, and you can mix and match them the way that you want. Because right off the very bat, one of the first things the game shows you is it teaches you how to make like a platform on like a rail system so that you can like ride the rail down to like a lower part of it. It also shows you how you can then like attach one of those Zonai fans. They call them fans. They're basically turbines, but you can attach them to, you know, one of those platforms if it's like at the bottom of the rail, and you can just hit the fan and it'll, you know, push you up the rail. And later on, you know, you'll find out, you know, how you can use those to make, like, rafts, you know, with, like, a couple of logs and one of those fans. You'll run into, like, sleds that you can, like, attach, like, a control to and then one of those fans. And then you can use it to, like, go across, like, seas of sand in, like, the Gerudo Desert. They, you can... you know, you can make like flying machines, you can make automobiles. The possibilities are quite large, and there really is no wrong way to play this game. The game gives you all of these tools at your disposal and basically says, okay, use these and figure out a way to do something. Which is cool, because I remember, Chris, you said this, you were kind of worried that this was going to be less like a customization thing and more of like just a basic puzzle. But it turns out it's actually the former, because they do give you like all these things that you can use. But as far as like actually progressing in the game goes, I've actually finished the Wind Temple. The thing about the Wind Temple is, in order to do it, you have to like get a special set of, I don't want to really call it armor because it's more of like warming clothes, because it's in the Rito domain, and the thing about the Rito domain is it's currently suffering from what seems like an endless blizzard. So it's cold, and of course, the higher up the mountains you go, the colder it gets. And once it gets to a certain point, it's actually hazardous, and it'll start hurting you. But I managed to, you know, I just started hunting, basically, because the piece of armor that you need to do it is like 500 rupees. And the thing about rupees and Tears of the Kingdom is they're kind of hard to come by. So once you get there, basically what the Wind Temple is it's literally a giant ship, like a giant galleon that's like sitting in the middle of this like giant cyclone that's causing this blizzard. And in order to like finish the temple, you basically have to go around parts of the ship trying to use the, because Tulin, those of you who don't remember who Tulin was, he was the son of what was then one of the new champions back in the Breath of the Wild. He ends up sort of taking his place because his dad has sort of taken over as chief of the Rito. And he has an ability where he can basically create wind gusts at command. And in order to finish the Wind Temple, there's like this giant like lock in the center of it. And the lock has to be opened with a sequence of gear mechanisms. And in order to get them to work, you have to use Tulin's ability to activate turbines that are connected to them. And then you end up going to a boss fight that actually isn't that difficult. It's like surprisingly easy, you know, as long as you've got, you know, enough arrows and a strong enough bow. I finished that. Anyway, but what happens is, I think part of the reason I was able to get it so fast as I did was I had actually taken a trip into the Gerudo region, which you can't really get too far into because, much as like what's happening with the Rito, they've also got some regional weather shit that's happening where in the desert is like hazardously hot in the day and absolutely freezing at night. So you can't really get too far in. You're stuck at the bazaar. But I managed to get like a Gerudo bow, which is like has like 25 attack power. So I was able to probably get that fairly easily. But yeah. So I decided to do that. I stopped the game last night. I'm at the Zora's domain. I've already gotten into the city. I just need to climb up, you know, the mountain to talk to Sidon. But yeah, that game is legitimately amazing. I love it. Like, I will admit there are parts of it that I find kind of annoying, specifically the controls to use the Ultra Hand, because not the actually like having to get attached and stuff, but having to like maneuver it around in such a way so that you can get it into like the right setup to attach it to something. It's not as precise as I would like it to be honest. But I mean, you find ways to work around it. But yeah, let's see what else. Just overall really happy with that game. It's as good as Breath of the Wild was, and in some ways is better. So, yeah, enjoying it immensely. So, Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, there is not much else I'm playing other than Tears of the Kingdom. But I did mention that I have been playing Humanity, but not a whole lot of it. I actually got access to the game like 2 weeks ago. So I've had it since before Tears of the Kingdom. And like, I just didn't give it that much time of day just because like there was nothing really pulling me in. Like, I do see why it's good and why it can be addictive. A lot of the puzzles, at least early on, are really short with really simple solutions. And then, of course, it'll go up from there. I just haven't reached that point yet just because, like, it's happening. But, yeah, like I said, I've only gotten through the tutorial part, and I hope to, like, get more through it maybe after I finish Tears of the Kingdom just because it's taking up so much of my time. And, yeah, so... Getting back to Tears of the Kingdom, I've filled up the map, so you know pretty much every part of the world is at my disposal now for where to go. I've completed around 55 shrines, and I have three of the sage abilities. And the last one that I have to get, I met the person that needs help there, and I don't know if I want to talk about the spell she uses, like just for spoiler's sake, but so yeah, it's interesting because like when I first started playing the game, the first thing I did was, or first started playing Breath of the Wild, I should say, the first thing I did was I looked for all the towers, and you know, as long as you found it, it was pretty much easy to activate. Now the majority of them have problems. So there's one where you have to go to a nearby cave and then find like the engineer to get it fixed. There's another one where the top is off and you have to actually climb to the top of the tower or get there through other means like zona items if you don't have enough stamina to fix the top. There's another one where it's completely covered in branches in the rain, and what you have to do is like create a roof with the wood provided so that you know you can go ahead and burn them and not have the rain ruin you, because the place where it's at has infinite rain. It's really cool, like, you know, figuring out all these solutions or, like, seeing how differently people do them. So, you know, these things that happen with the shrines can all happen outside of, or can happen on Hyrule Field or just about anywhere. So it's really cool seeing how, like, the game shows you your progression based on what you know. I don't know if you've discovered this yet, Brandon, considering you're pretty much going, like, the expected route, because you did the Wind Temple first, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I did also go territory for a little while too.
Yeah, like one thing I didn't do was I didn't stay around at like that main first town all that long. And then you know, when I came back, there were like six shrines that were beyond easy. One was like, "Oh yeah, throw your weapon at this monster."
Yeah,
I was like, "I already know how to do that." Or
yeah, well, I've been going back and forth to the original settlement because that's where you can. You know, you can go down into the shelter and you can, like, you know, sleep and melt back. There's also a, there's like a goddess statue there too, so that you can use your points to, you know, increase your hearts or your stamina. And there's also like a free pot over there you can go over there to cook stuff with. So.
Exactly. Yeah, like, it's really impressive just, you know, being lost in this world and just forgetting all about the basic essentials that can possibly happen. Like,
One of the things I really do love about this one, especially compared to Breath of the Wild, although I really did love Breath of the Wild, they've really gone all in on, like, the world building this time around. Because you really do get... This is, like, I think this might be, like, the first Zelda game that actively admits that it's part of a timeline and talks about sort of how that timeline works. Like, even with, like, Ocarina of Time, it was kind of like, you know, it was very insular. But in this one, they're like, no, this, we're all part of this timeline. And, you know, there's a, you know, it, and part of one of the other things I loved is the fact that, you know, this game takes place, like, I think, like, supposed to take, like, 2 years after Breath of the Wild, and it shows, because it looks like a civilization that was on the brink and is now actually, like, back and rebuilding. So, you know, you'll find, like, you know, their technology is advancing somewhat, they're actively going between settlements, you'll find, like, different groups and tribes, like having small settlements in different towns and everything. And, you know, just all in all, it's, I love the fact that it feels more lived in than a lot of Zelda games do.
Yeah, and then like especially coming off of Breath of the Wild, where a lot of the criticism was that, oh, like, yeah, it's a big world, but like there really isn't a whole lot of stuff to do. It's just a bunch of grass and stuff. And I think Nintendo really addressed it here by, you know, just really adding more. Whether it's the guy who really supports Hudson, so you have to fix all of his signs. Like, you know, the fact that every, I'm sure you already found the reporter side quest, right?
Yep.
That stable. Yeah, doing that makes every stable have a big side quest that helps you out. And then that also leads to a whole bunch of other side quests. Like this morning, actually, was the first time I found a great berry. Because yep. I just had to just go back and like I found a stable and I never even like realized it was there, and then all of a sudden the great fairy was there, and I was like, oh, okay, I can finally upgrade my armor because everybody I'm fighting is killing me in one hit. So I was like, all right, I want to find a way to make this game easy. So like that's what I'm doing right now. That's why I have 55 shrines. And yeah, like it's crazy that a lot of games are really just trying to capitalize off of Breath of the Wild success. And like Nintendo was like, all right, we're already done with that. We're gonna go ahead and build off of more here. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if this game was maybe like has been done for like 2 or 3 years, and all they were doing was QAing it to this point. Because things like the ascendability are just like absolutely bonkers. Like, I know people in game development who don't understand how Nintendo even did that in the first place, because that can easily break the game, but it doesn't.
Oh God, so easy it can break the game in just a million different ways.
Especially like coming off games like Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, where it can't even handle a motorcycle. Whereas with this, you're breaking the map every chance you go, and Nintendo wants you to do that. So
yeah,
it's just really impressive so far. I'm just waiting on the day, because I don't know how the Switch works, where it tells you, like, I think it's 15 days where it tells you how many hours you spent in the game. Like I am scared and looking forward to how many hours I've spent playing this. Like even when I'm not playing it, like I wish I was. I've always said that while Breath of the Wild wasn't my favorite, it's definitely the Zelda game I wish I could experience for the first time again. And Tears of the Kingdom gave me that and more. So I don't know if I want to call it better yet, because like, you know, the previous game had to have happened in order for us to get this, but man, this is everything I imagine it to be and more. And it's fun just finding new things every other day. And then just hearing the things that you and Chris are discovering. And like knowing that either I've done it before or haven't done it, just like, you know, makes you like go crazy about like whatever Nintendo has done to make this work out. So it was worth the wait. I'm happy to be playing it. But yeah, that's all I got.
All right, let's get to some news here, as we have a bunch of stuff here to talk about. We've got the Game Pass lineup for the next 2 weeks of stuff to play. Yeah, available now as we're talking. There is Eastern Exorcist on console and PC. This seems like a horror game, I guess. It says play as a skilled exorcist against chaotic evil to fight your way through the brutal world and experience unforeseen entanglements of complex beings. So I don't know exactly if it's an action-focused game or just more narrative-focused. I don't know, but that's available now.
Yeah,
Ghost Lore is available now on console Game Pass. It's been on PC Game Pass for a bit. I think this is a Diablo-style action RPG, loot-based, but focused on what they call East Punk or Southeast Asian folklore. So that's neat. I think I played a little bit of this on PC Game Pass. It was a little rough around the edges. I'm not sure if this is on early access or not, but there you go for that. And the other one is FIFA 23 is a part of EA Play's The List, I think they're calling it. So if you have Game Pass Ultimate or EA Play on PC, PlayStation, or Xbox, you can play that now in full. So there you go for that stuff. For the games coming up, May 23rd, Planet of Lana for console and PC. This is a cinematic puzzle adventure game in the vein of, you know, your Limbos, Inside, Flashback, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you're kind of moving around, solving puzzles, avoiding these robot enemies that are all over the place in this world, doing all kinds of stuff. And that's the one that has kind of a Studio Ghibli style to it that looks really good. So looking forward to that. That'll be available on the 23rd here. That'll be Tuesday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
For May 25th, there's Cassette Beast is available on console Game Pass. So that's the Pokemon style RPG there. So you can check that one out. For console Game Pass, there's Massive Chalice on the 25th. Mm. That is the Double Fine tactical strategy game, very much based on a lot of the PC type of Bloodline strategy games, where you're dealing with managing your kingdom or whatever for hundreds of years, such. So that was one of their Kickstarter games. I think their second one.
Yep.
So that's one you can check out if you have not played it before.
Mm-hmm.
Also, May 25th, Railway Empire 2, console and PC. So that's a train tycoon game where you're running a railway company and dealing with, laying down tracks and all that kind of stuff. So you can check that one out. That'll be Thursday for all those 25th games. For the 30th, that'll be the Tuesday after next, Chicory Colorful Tale will be available on console and PC Game Pass. That is a really cool Zelda-style adventure game, but based on your main mechanic is laying down paint in this sort of coloring book-style world to solve puzzles and fight enemies and that kind of stuff. So. That's a really cool game. So there you go. Some neat stuff there to check out. So keep an eye out for that stuff for the next week or so.
Mm-hmm.
Next up here, we've got our next big PlayStation Showcase they've announced. Will be happening on Wednesday, May 24th at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time.
Mm.
Here in the U.S., they say they are going to be going for about an hour, I think they say here.
Mm-hmm.
For a bit over an hour, focused on PS5 and PSVR 2 games and development from studios around the world.
Mm.
Expect a glimpse at several new creations from PlayStation Studios, as well as Spellbinding games from our third-party partners and indie creators. Mm. So that's cool. We'll get a bunch of stuff to talk about next week's show. For that, I expect we'll probably see at least Spider-Man 2 there. And maybe get a date for that, because that is supposed to be out sometime this fall. So that would be good to see more of that. But not 100% sure what else we will see. Maybe we'll see some of Wolverine, the other Insomniac game, but that's not out till next year, so that might be something they show at another time. But what we might see, maybe what Naughty Dog's working on, maybe the Last of Us Factions game. We'll see some of that at some point.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see the next game from Team Asobi.
Mm-hmm.
The Astrobot people. Maybe there'll be another PSVR 2 game from them.
Mm-hmm.
That would be cool to see. Another one to expand on what they've done with the last two games. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. Looking forward to this. I'll be working, so I'll have to catch it afterwards, but that'll be a fun one to keep an eye on as we head into the Summer Game Fest season here.
Mm-hmm.
And we got another update for your subscription services for Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack for May 25th. They have decided to release all three of the Super Mario Advance games.
Mm-hmm.
Super Mario Advance, which features Super Mario Brothers 2, mm-hmm. Super Mario Advance 2, which is Super Mario World,
yep.
Super Mario Advance 3, which is Yoshi's Island.
Mm-hmm.
All games that already have at least one version you can play right now on Nintendo Switch Online for those games. I don't know if they have Super Mario All-Stars on the Super Nintendo app. Which would give you another version of Super Mario Brothers 2 to play.
They do have it on the app. They have two versions of it, actually. So this is essentially just them re-releasing the same game a third or fourth time even, because Super Mario Brothers 3 is on the, like, this is the third time now, because they have it on the NES, they have it on the SNES All-Stars, and now they have this one. So,
well, 3 isn't on this, it's just 2 World and Yoshi's Island.
Mm-hmm. On NES or SNES?
These are all GBA games.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's what these three cover.
Yeah, yeah, but wasn't Super Mario Brothers 3 part of the original game?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but like my point being was all of the Super Mario Advance games are essentially ports of All-Stars. So it's essentially like giving them the same thing except on Game Boy. The main difference is being sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it looks like we got Super Mario Advance 4 at the launch. So, okay. Mm. We have all 4 now, covering a range of games that were already available previously.
Mm-hmm.
Especially have this more expensive tier, so that's a fun thing. But they do have some bonus stuff. I think Super Mario Brothers 2 has a version of the classic Mario Brothers arcade game in there. I think Super Mario World has some extra level stuff if you use the e-reader. And I think Yoshi's Island also had some extra stuff if you did some collectible things, but they all have their bonuses and minuses. Because, the GBA couldn't necessarily do the full breadth of audio stuff that the Super Nintendo games could do. And I think graphically also is a little bit different, but for the most part, they're the same games. So there you go for that stuff. That'll be on Friday coming up. And next up here, a new release, Slayers X Terminal Aftermath, Vengeance of the Slayer, coming to the Xboxes and PC on June 1st. It'll also be on Game Pass. This is a spinoff of Hypnospace Outlaw, the big like internet adventure game on like the late 90s, early 2000s internet culture. Mm-hmm. This is like one of the characters. Yeah, Zane, who formed his own studio and talked about making his own game. And this is very much like a clone of like Duke Nukem of sorts, but very over the top and ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Started making this in 1999. Unfortunately, just as he was close to completing his masterpiece, the CD-ROM went missing, was lost. Decades went by before Zane finally found it again. Mm-hmm. The game is now ready to launch. That's a fun, weird little game that you'll be able to play.
Mm-hmm.
Seems exclusive to Xbox for a while, much like the original game was. So yeah, there you go. Next up, we got the new game from NetherRealm Studios finally announced, as they've been teasing for a while.
Yep.
And it is Mortal Kombat 1.
Yep, they are rebooting the timeline yet again.
Not really rebooting, it's just following up on what 11 was doing, which was sort of finishing up what was going on in that reboot timeline, where Liu Kang is now the god of Earthrealm. He's a fire god, and he is sort of rebooting the universe to its new state with him as the main god. They're bringing a bunch of the main characters back for this new timeline thing that's going on, and spins on some of them. Others are sort of their classic versions that you would expect. The official characters confirmed right now: Liu Kang, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Katana, Melina, Kung Lao, Raiden, Johnny Cage, and Shang Tsung is a pre-order bonus. And they're going heavy on the bonuses and pre-order stuff.
It's WB Games. What do you expect?
The premium and collector's editions you can get come with a combat pack. That seems like the first big character pack that gives you early access to 6 playable post-launch fighters and 5 cameo fighters. That's cameo with a K, which prompted a lot of people to mention, like, oh, what about cameo from the Xbox game? Xbox 360 game. But I think people are expecting it to be other WB characters. I think like Peace, piece, Bringer, whatever the fuck that character's name was, John Cena's character from the DC show.
Peacemaker?
Like, Peacemaker, yeah. Maybe one of the characters from The Boys. I think that's also WB property. Maybe, I don't know what else would be possible, but that seems like a whole thing, like 6 extra fighters and 5 cameo fighters. Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme character skin for Johnny Cage, which I guess that's a whole thing you could do.
Oh, that's a funny little bit of a deep cut right there.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's famously part of Mortal Kombat lore, that originally, you know, the game was supposed to be an adaptation of Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Bloodsport. That's who Johnny Cage's character was supposed to be.
Yeah, but this will be out September 19th, $70. If you buy the more expensive versions, you will get early access to the game as of September 14th, as well as what they're calling Dragon Crystals with a K.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I assume, a premium currency thing.
Probably.
Like they did with 11. So they'll do more annoying stuff like that.
Yep.
The collector's edition includes a Liu Kang sculpture, 16.5 inch, so that's a pretty big one.
Mm-hmm.
What else? A Liu Kang character skin, 3 exclusive art prints, and a steel case for that. And additional dragon crystals to give you 2,700 total. So it looks really fun. The fatalities they've shown seem extremely gory, like the people turn into literal just chunks of meat and wet blood all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, this is all just, you know, this is all just CG, so.
Yeah, but the people that made them had to look at a lot of gore.
Yeah, which is,
this stuff.
I've read stories about, you know, the people who are in charge of that part of the game, and like, yeah, it's, you would think that it, on one part, it's creatively fulfilling, and it kind of is, but also, yeah, having to do that type of work for an extended period of time can probably have unhealthy effects on your psyche.
Yeah, it probably fucks you up.
Yeah.
If you're not already in that kind of state of mind, usually.
Yeah, I mean, they have to use reference materials for shit like that, and I'm not talking about comic books.
Yeah, a lot of...
Or movies.
Yeah, stuff from morgues and all that kind of stuff.
I'm sure they've probably watched. I'm pretty watched. They've watched every single installment of Red Asphalt at least a half a dozen million times at this point. But.
Yeah. But yeah, that looks like it's going to be a fun thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even though it is once again all shit from Warner Brothers Games, because we all know what happens when they do a game. It's just. It's one of those things you kind of half-heartedly tolerate, because usually it's NetherRealm Studios and it's worth playing. So,
yeah, so if you wait long enough, there will just be a full access edition that gives you all the characters and all that. You don't have to piecemeal it out if you're not, you know, intent on being there for multiplayer day one or anything like that. If you're just there to play it later, you'll probably be able to get it pretty cheap later on. Maybe I'll grab Mortal Kombat 11 here at some point. Just enjoy that. The bundle that has all the DLC. And deal with as little of the crap that these games tend to launch with.
Mm.
So, yeah, there you go. Mortal Kombat 1. Mm. Deciding to go that route of the Battlefield 1 kind of route of like, well, this is going to be the new first game, but we've already named 2 games Mortal Kombat. So let's call it Mortal Kombat 1.
Mm.
To show that we're really serious about rebooting it this time.
Yep.
Or resetting the timeline, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I think 11 was all about timeline stuff.
Yep.
So it's like, oh, they have a chance to like reset everything, and that makes sense to start back here.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Mortal Kombat. One of the big releases for this fall.
Mm-hmm.
But to a game that was not a big release, Pac-Man 99. It is going to be delisted on October 8th.
Mm.
If you purchase the DLC and such to add single player or local multiplayer content that'll be continue to be available. I don't know if they're taking down the online stuff. But they did mention here August 8th, discontinued content, paid custom themes. September 8th, discontinued content, Pac-Man 99 Deluxe Pack, and the Mode Unlock Pack. And then October 8th, discontinuation of online services for the main game / distribution of main game and free custom themes. So play that while you can if you enjoyed it. I think a lot of people bopped right off of it. Did not enjoy it in the ways that people enjoyed, Tetris 99 or even Super Mario 35.
Yeah.
That one got, taken down real fast before people could really enjoy it. I think like 6 months later, but this one's been allowed to simmer for a while, but I don't think it's just taken off in the way that people would have expected and, isn't anything like, Pac-Man CE as far as being something that took people's imaginations by storm and added a new twist on the Pac-Man thing. That wasn't that big of a twist, but still, that game was fun. This one's all right, but you still have a chance to keep playing it and all that, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a bummer announcement. I played Pac-Man 99 like for a good month after it came out, and then it was always a game that I went back to. I've unfortunately never won. I've gotten as close as number two a number of times, but tough to see this go. At least there are the premium options, so you can go ahead and play with bots and stuff, so that does seem cool. But at the end of the day, it's gonna be there. Aside from that, though, as long as it's not Tetris, then I'm good. Pac-Man, I'm totally fine losing, but kind of sucks. And then only because I was dealing with something else at the moment, I just wanted to quickly go back to Mortal Kombat 1. I'm actually pretty excited for this, just because NetherRealm has done a much better job over the last two generations with Mortal Kombat. And I've always thought that the lore has been interesting, but there's just been so much of it, whether it's been movies, comic books, and TV. And I just think starting over again would be great, just so that I can go ahead and go at it at my own pace. Granted, I know that I could have done that since the beginning, but just the possibility of just seeing it refreshed through fresh eyes does sound awesome. I know that'll cause some controversy with people that have been fans since day one. I mean, I've been a fan since day one too, but I would never be able to tell you that, oh, Sonya Blade died? I didn't know that. So just being able to start over something.
Yeah, so let's see what's next up here. Oh yeah, Lords of the Fallen finally has a release date. I think it's been delayed a couple of times here. But yeah, that finally has a release date of October 13th, Friday the 13th. So they're going in on the spooky vibes on there. And I guess they mentioned here that the trailer that they used to announce the release date and all that is set to Iron Maiden, so... there you go for that, but that'll be cool. It's another Souls-like. The original was pretty good. One of the first big ones to come out after the From Software games. It has been surpassed by a lot of the other competitors, so it'd be cool to see sort of how much they have learned from that stuff and what they can do to make it stand out. So there's a lot of Souls-likes now for people of all different stripes of what they want out of them. So there you go. That'll be on just the new consoles and PC. So that'll be out in a few months. And something else here that will be coming out at some point. They haven't announced an actual date on this, but they announced the first paid DLC for Power Wash Simulator that takes place in the world of SpongeBob SquarePants.
I'm kind of surprised they've only now done this.
Yeah, they just started putting out these themed packs starting at the early part of this year. But now they're putting out paid stuff, and this looks really good. They've done a really good job of texture work and all that to make this look like you're in the world of SpongeBob. Because the backgrounds are that kind of blue with the weird little... starfish kind of looking things in the backgrounds, that kind of stuff. But you get to work on six maps here. Conk Street, which I think is where Patrick and SpongeBob live. The Bikini Bottom Bus, the Krusty Krab, the Paddy Wagon, the Invisible Boatmobile, and the Mermalair. Let's see. They've also added 10 achievements and trophies to the game for this pack, and the pack will be available for $7.99 when it launches sometime this summer. They said they're going to announce a date here in the next few weeks, so we'll find out about that. Maybe that'll be at one of the Summer Game Fest things. That seems like a thing that could happen. But yeah, they've also added some new skin stuff to, you know, make it canonically possible to power wash at the bottom of the ocean. But, you know, that's the thing that SpongeBob has dealt with before, as they've had, you know, fires and that kind of stuff. Sandy lives in a water-free area, kind of like that. But they have, like, this weird, like, almost steampunk-looking power washer for this thing. So there you go. That'll be on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC sometime this summer. So we'll see how that goes. Looking forward to that. Also happening this summer, WrestleQuest. They were hoping to get this out sometime this month in May, but they have run out of time and decided to just delay it to the summer time frame. As I said here, we cannot wait for you all to finally jump in and explore all of WrestleQuest. After 4 years, a 200,000 plus original word count, many power bombs to settle disputes, and countless gallons of baby oil, we're down to the final stretch of development. But they also say they need more time for this game. And yeah, they do say they have 50 plus hours of gameplay content in this game, so that's cool. Yeah, the added time has allowed us to go back to our wish list and add in new and improved features like an entirely redone user interface, accessibility options, a fully updated world map, enhanced visuals, more sweat, and a gorilla press quantity of game balancing. So hopefully that makes that game really good whenever it's out, because that's one to keep an eye on there. That'll be on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. So that's exciting. And yeah, let's get to some other news here. The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom has sold over 10 million copies worldwide in its first 3 days.
Becoming
the fastest selling game in the series. Basically about the same amount that the Pokemon Scarlet and Violet sold last fall. So it's on that kind of pace for sales, and maybe even higher, I don't know. But that's as far as they've announced so far on this stuff. But yeah, that's definitely going to be making more money for them, because it's a $70 game, and we know how much they discount these games. Zelda, I don't think, has gone on sale for less than $39.99 on the eShop at any point. So this one may not go under like $50 or something like that. We haven't seen a $70 Nintendo game yet, at least not since the N64 days. So we'll see how things do on that front for the people that maybe don't want to spend $70, which there's the vouchers that can help out with that stuff. Or for $100, you get two vouchers to get any two of their games. You can make one of those Tears of the Kingdom and then get, you know, a bit cheaper off of one of their other games. So yeah, there you go for that stuff. But yeah, pretty good start for them. Not too surprising. And let's see, next up here. Yeah, we finally got a new update on the Project Leonardo controller, the accessibility controller that Sony announced last year, I think. They have announced that it has an official name now, the Access controller, for the PS5, and have posted a bunch of details here about it. What it includes: there's analog stick caps. They have a standard one, a ball stick cap, and a dome cap. So if you want them to be a bit more like the analog sticks, otherwise you just have like a big ball that you can grab onto. They also have a bunch of different button cap types, different shapes and sizes. There's pillow buttons. I think those are sort of rounded ones. There's flat button caps that are flat. There are wide flat button caps that are covered two button sockets on this thing. There's overhangs, which for players with smaller hands, they are positioned closer to the center. There's curved button caps that can, I think those curve upwards, as well as swappable button cap tags so that you can note sort of which button corresponds to which button, or which of these caps correspond to which buttons on the controller. They have made it so it can be rotated how you need to. They have mount options on the bottom, so you can screw it into the general open design, mount stuff that people have for these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, the amps mount or tripod mount as well. You can adjust the distance of the analog stick from the controller. You can rotate it around however you fit. You can use two of them together. It has four 3.5 millimeter auxiliary ports to integrate their own specialty sticks, buttons, and whatnot that people have made for these things, including all that stuff. Now they have a site for this, so you can sign up for email updates and get information for when pre-orders launch. So that seems like it's probably going to happen sometime later this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also announced shown off a bunch of screenshots of what the console UI is looking for, the customization stuff for this. As they mentioned, you'll have up to like 30 profiles you can create for this thing for different controls, and have three that you can swap between on the controller itself for that stuff. And that's pretty cool. Yeah, just looks really cool with all the options you can do here for that stuff. So that's cool to see. That's neat. Looking forward to seeing this thing come out and see how people take to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely looks like a cool device. You know, I'm not going to pretend I know anything about accessibility, but if it works for them, I'm happy.
Yeah. It's the controller they've been working with Able Gamers and a number of other groups on getting feedback and all that kind of stuff to help make it something that, all the people that need it can hopefully use it well for their system and play the games that they want to play as well as they can. So yeah, there you go for that stuff. Let's see. Next up here, there was a Humble Games showcase that happened earlier this week that had a number of games in it. I think the one that stuck out to me was a game called Breeze in the Clouds that comes from their Black Game Developer Fund, where they offer funds for Black developers to work on games, and if they find some that they really like, they will publish them themselves. But they are also free to, publish elsewhere if they need to. This is one that they picked up. It is a 2D action adventure starring a corgi named Breeze, who fights with a lot of weather-based powers. That kind of stuff has a really cool art style to it. That'll be on PC at some point. I think there are many dates for a lot of this stuff. There's like Blood that comes from an animation studio called Exit 73. It's making their first game. It's kind of a dungeon crawler game that looks really cool. For that, they announced a sequel to Wizard of Legend 2. Yeah, Secret of Legend called Wizard of Legend 2. Made by the developer of the Children of Morta game, which is a really cool game. They're incorporating 3D visuals into that. So that's cool. And then I have online co-op and all that kind of stuff. So that's neat. Yeah, they showed more of Stray Gods. That'll be out in August 3rd. What else here? Bow, Path of the Teal Lotus. This is another 2D animated game that looks really neat. Yes. Art style reminiscent of the classic Japanese ukiyo-e watercolors and wood carvings that you might have recognized from something like Okami, that kind of thing. That's a 2.5D action platformer, so that's cool looking. There's Cataclysmo, the team that made Moonlighter. That looks neat. Yeah, there's Lost Skies, the new game from Bossa Studios. The people have made Surgeon Simulator, but this is nothing like that. It's like a open world survival co-op game kind of thing. So that looks neat. And yeah, they announced that Superland 6 inches Under is sort of the follow up to the original Superland is coming to the consoles. I think it's already available now. So that's a first person action puzzle platformer thing. Mm-hmm. A little bit of Metroid style to it. People like the first one a lot. The second one seems to be just as good. So there you go. Quick little humble game showcase of some cool stuff there for you to check out. Next up here, there's a legendary actor finally getting into a game.
Yeah.
The game and an actor that you would never have paired together.
Yeah.
In any way. The game is Dead by Daylight. And the actor is one Nicolas Cage.
Yep.
Finally getting to a game. He's going to be a survivor. Not one of the horror monsters that destroys everybody, though that would have been fun to see if he did a bunch of Nick Cage stuff. But this seems to be modern Nick Cage and his big beard and all that and wrinkles. But yeah, he gets to play as that, and it seems to be part of some of the other stuff they are working on for the near future, as they did this all in a big like roadmap updates for things that'll happen in July, I think. They released a teaser for announcement on July 5th regarding what this part of his involvement in this game is going to be. Maybe it'll be more than just him being a survivor to this. But who knows? We'll find out in about 2 months. So there you go for that. Nick Cage in a video game for the first time, which is a bit surprising. But yeah, there you go. And the biggest controversial news of the week is Overwatch 2. They announced their roadmap for the next two seasons, I believe, of game content, which somehow it's already in seasons 5 and 6 for a game that came out in October, but whatever there. But the big part of the news that they kind of tried to glance over as much as they could is that they're essentially canceling the big PvE story mode that was going to be in this game. That was kind of the whole impetus for them to need to make a, you know, an Overwatch 2 instead of just continuing to update the original game. That also supposedly necessitated that they had to shut down the original Overwatch. They've said there's still going to be some PvE content in future seasons, but it sounds like it's going to be something more like what they've been doing in the for the original game, with like these little short-term mission modes that you could play with other people and do that kind of stuff. But it seems like they kind of ran into a situation where they kind of promised too much for these story modes, where they were going to have like various, you know, skill tree upgrades and all this kind of stuff, and supposedly that had up to like 30 or 40 things to unlock that I don't know why you would need that much. Even for this kind of game, that seems like a thing that's like, seems like you guys just feature creeped and just added way too much and then realized what you were doing was not capable of being released in any reasonable amount of time without, you know, pulling back on the PvP stuff. So now they've worked themselves out of that, just canceling it and kind of annoying everybody that kind of wanted, you know, more story stuff in this game, as people have really taken to the lore of this world and the potential for it. And yeah, that's just kind of where they're at. It's where they've essentially created this whole expectation for this mode and have had to go back on it to cancel that and just basically say like, oh, we're just going to kind of do what we've been doing. Releasing bits of story here and there, playable and unplayable stuff. So, yeah, there you go for Overwatch 2. Kind of devastating the people that have been just waiting for this PvE stuff to happen. So, yeah, there you go. Big disappointment, but probably helps set the expectations for the future content they're going to be able to make for this game a little bit better, but still nevertheless going to be annoying the very dedicated audience that this series has. So yeah, there you go. Overwatch 2. But now we're going to end the show here by talking about what you can expect of Summer Game Fest for the next few weeks. I think we'll be streaming at least a couple of these things, I'm hoping to. We got the PlayStation Showcase is sort of the first big one that happens on Wednesday. I'll be working, so we won't be doing a co-stream of that. But I would like to do some for the Summer Game Fest showcase proper. That'll be happening Thursday, June 8th. That'll be at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. Pacific. Hoping to stream that one. That'll be a fun one to check out and see what the what gamut of announcements they'll have for this year. And then the Xbox Game Showcase will be happening on June 11th. That's Sunday. That'll be at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific. That will be followed up, I think, at about 2:30 there, estimating for the Starfield Direct. So you can tune in after that to see more of Starfield and see how that's looking as it heads into, I forget if they announced the release date for that. I think it might be in September as well for that game. But there's that. And then after that, the PC Gaming Show showcase for 2023 will be happening at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, also on Sunday. So that's going to follow up with a bunch of PC-focused announcements and games and such. I think they've teased a bunch of stuff here. They're going to have more on Baldur's Gate 3. I think that'll be releasing in August. There's Dune Awakening, Frostpunk 2, PAX Day, and a brand new game from Clay Entertainment. So that'll be cool. New game from Clay will be fun to see for that. So that'll be... and they also mentioned some updates on major series like PUBG, XCOM, and ARK. Mm-hmm. Or no, that's just stuff they've had in the past. Okay, never mind on that. I thought they were announcing they're going to have some other stuff too. But no, that's just stuff they've announced in previous shows. So there you go for that one. And Monday is the latest show that will be there. That is Ubisoft Forward. They're calling it Ubisoft Forward Live from L.A. That'll be happening June 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific. I don't know if I'll be able to live stream that one, but I assume we'll see more of Assassin's Creed Mirage that's supposed to be out this fall. Maybe what else they've got hopefully releasing sometime soon, because they've been not doing much of late, Ubisoft. They've been very much trying to... I guess work on whatever the next slate of games is, but they've been very light for a while now, for at least the last 6 months or so. So there you go. That's the Summer Game Fest schedule. Some decent looking stuff, but I'm curious to see if anything new gets added here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and then knowing the industry, they probably will. I mean, that's just been the case over the past few years. If Keely has really gotten a hold of it and these are like partners of his, then you know, hopefully stick to this week or two. Hopefully we don't have a full Game Fest, or what I mean, like, you know, have various events over 3 months. Pretty lame.
Yeah, I think they've got a list of partners on their Summer Game Fest sites, which includes a lot of the stuff you would expect, like PlayStation. I think Xbox is on there, you know, Epic, Sega, Niantic, Paradox, Square Enix, Steam, Ubisoft, Warner Brothers, Disney, EA, Activision, Amazon, Annapurna, Bandai Namco, Behavior, Capcom, CD Projekt Red, Devolver Digital, Digital Extremes, Level Infinite, Hoyoverse, Gearbox, Focus Entertainment, PlayOn, Razer, and some other stuff. Even the Samsung Gaming Hub is on here. I don't know why. I guess they're going to have some tech stuff to talk about at some point, but no Nintendo. So I'm going to say don't expect any sort of direct tied to any of this stuff. It seems like they're probably wait till later in the summer to do anything like that. to announce what they've got coming out later this year, but Nintendo's probably taking a break. It's just going to coast on Tears of the Kingdom videos and news and all that for that stuff. But yeah, everybody else, it seems like, is largely going to be involved in this in some way or shape, with either a showcase or just having announcements at the Summer Game Fest showcase. So, but there you go. That's going to be it for the show this week. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and more tales of our exploits in Hyrule.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be back next time. And, if you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know that they should check it out and select strangers that are also farting around in Tears of the Kingdom. Doing some fun stuff. And
yeah. Hopefully when it's not raining, because it is stupidly easy to get hit by lightning.
I have not been in lightning very much in that game.
It happens fairly often.
Yeah. Lots of rain, but it's tough to know, like, when it's raining, if it's like, is this tied to this area, or is this just a long storm that's happening for a while? I had one of the towers where it wanted me to burn a bunch of stuff, but it was raining for like a good 24 hours in the game. I was like, am I just stuck here? Am I supposed to just figure out how to cover all this stuff to burn it? It eventually stopped, and I just finished it like 5 seconds later. But thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. And we hope to see you next time. Have a good one. And we'll see you all next time.